We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
Larry and Joe, and these two multi-instrumentalists fuse their respective Venezuelan and Appalachian folk traditions on the harp, banjo, cuatro, fiddle, upright bass, guitar, and maracas to prove that music truly has no borders. Larry is a legend of Nanera music in his native country of Venezuela. He came to the U.S. as an asylum seeker and worked construction jobs until teaming up with Joe, a Grammy-nominated Appalachian bluegrass musician, to create a blend of musical styles that is compelling and entertaining. And on March 15th, Larry and Joe are teaming up with Church World Services for a concert and jam session. And we're going to get into those details. And our guest today is Joe Troop, who spent a decade living in Argentina, where he formed his Grammy-nominated band, Che Apaleche, which with some of his students. And I'm happy to have Joe here with us today. Hello. How are you doing?
Hey, Marquis, doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. So can you tell us, we heard a little snippet of it, but what exactly is Latin grass music?
Well, Latin grass is just kind of, it's a good marketing term, really. It just refers to this concept of using traditions from across the Americas and finding some sort of common ground within them. Larry is Venezuelan, but he plays a lot of different styles of music from the Caribbean and from, you know, the larger swath of South America, Andean folk, bolero. He does a little bit of everything, but he's coming at it from a Venezuelan folk music perspective. And I spent most of my adult life living in Latin America, but I was raised playing Appalachian string band music. So you take, you know, this Pan-American string band concept, mix it all together, and then we can call it Latin grass, I guess.
So I talked to folks about their origin stories and how they got started. So I'm going to ask the same question here for you. How did you all bump into each other and then form this group?
Well, it's curious. I kind of built a career fusing Latin American folk with Appalachian string band music, but then also working with migrants. I've been involved in you know, defending the rights of asylum seekers and dreamers and you know, just basically people with precarious immigration statuses in my home state of North Carolina. And then through the grapevine, someone that knew that I was both a musician and working with migrants said, hey, there's this brilliant musician, migrant, that's working construction in Raleigh. You ought to know who he is. So that person sent me videos of Larry, and I saw them, and I couldn't believe it, because I've loved, since I was a teenager, Venezuelan folk music, specifically música llanera, which is his area of expertise. So I called him up, and he was open to this idea of collaboration. We got up a couple years ago, and we played a gig in Durham, North Carolina, and the crowd was really into it. We were really into it, and it just lit a spark in our hearts. And we said, okay, well, maybe we can go somewhere with this. So over the course of the past 2 years, we ended up, finishing up, tying up loose ends in our life to sort of pave the way to maybe take a crack at this and see if we could live off of this exclusively. And it has worked out. As of the last 14 months, both of our full-time jobs have become this duo. And Larry is thankfully back to his true vocation, which is music. After 6.5 years lifting cinder blocks, which was noble work that he was glad to have, but He was pretty demoralized, not being able to continue his career. But that's the plight of so many migrants. They leave these illustrious careers behind, and then they have to find whatever work they can get. So that's in a nutshell, that's our origin story.
Yeah. So can you take us to that moment where you and Larry are either sitting at a coffee shop or on a Zoom? I don't know. Take us to that moment where you both are like, all right, you know what? This is what we're going to do 100% of the time. This is going to finance our lives. If you can take us to that moment, what was the conversation like?
It was a gradual thing. I mean, Larry, since he had come to the United States, all he knew of the United States really was working 12, 14 hour days. Mm. When we met, I knew, you know, different styles of Latin American folk. So we were able to play sort of, we both love Mexican music, for example. So we came together and we were doing some Mexican folk songs. And then, I love música llanera, which is his, you know, he plays the harp virtuosically. And I was familiar with that music because when I lived in Buenos Aires, there were hundreds of thousands of immigrants fleeing Venezuela there. So I was exposed to that. Mm. But then when I played a bluegrass song on the banjo, Larry said, well, whoa, what is that? Is that the music of the wild, wild west? And I was like, no, bro, it's the music of North Carolina where you live. So he didn't know that. So I think what really kind of galvanized our duo is when I was able to take him to outdoor music festivals in the summer of 2022. Mm. I took him to a couple fiddlers conventions. And I remember when we walked into this, to the Mount Airy Fiddlers Convention back in June of 2022, Larry broke down and cried. It was like watching someone find themselves in a new place, because it was like, you know, thousands of people out in the middle of a field playing string band music. And that's where Larry's coming from. He's coming from a whole life of string band music, except it's joropo. It's not bluegrass in old time. But the community really welcomed him and could not believe that a man with such prowess as an artist was not able to continue working in that field in the United States. But, you know, to anyone in, you know, the immigrant rights fight, it's of no surprise. I mean, you'll find people of all professions just, you know, doing odd jobs to get by for their family. So anyway, I think it was that point when the community was like, whoa, you got to do this professionally. He had, you know, hundreds of people said, got behind us and started pushing. And, wow. And that sort of, so that the community aspect of traditional music in the South really put wind in our sails. And so it was kind of like, over the course of 6 months, I think Larry realized, oh, this is for real. There's a scene of art lovers and connoisseurs and people that will support this in here in the United States.
Joe, you said a fiddler convention. I will tell you this. I'm today years old finding out about a fiddler convention. Just a little sidebar here. What is incorporated in a fiddler convention?
So a fiddler's convention is basically, it's imagine, you know, several thousand people that play music going and camping out in a field or renting hotels near where the festival is held, or bringing their RVs. Like there's everything from glamping to people who sleep under a tarp. Wow. But then there's a stage and bands perform in a competition. Instrumentalists perform in their respective instrument categories or dance categories. There's hundreds of people making food for everyone. The ones that aren't playing are sometimes making food. There's people dancing. It's a subculture here in the United States, particularly in the Southeast, of just string band music enthusiasts. It's definitely a vibrant subculture. But it's unknown to those of us who aren't completely immersed in it. But there's a very similar phenomena in Venezuela with joropo. They express their art in the same way. They have competitions, they foster youth enthusiasts of the musical genres, and they put them on stages, give them a launching pad, and that's kind of what fiddlers conventions are. There's one almost every weekend. You could spend your whole entire summer, which some people do, just bouncing around from musical festival to musical festival. But it's not you pay an entrance fee and you can get back some of the money you paid if you perform. That's kind of how it works. And there's prize money for people who win. So it's basically just a it's a way to keep these musical traditions going forward.
Oh, wow. To quote the young folks, that sounds lit. It sounds like a good time. It really, really does. Before we go to our first break here, what aspects of Venezuelan and Appalachian folk music do you and Larry integrate into your fusion style?
Well, so we each bring a piece of ourselves to each other's traditions. Like, for example, we'll play joropo, or like a fast and furious música llanera, Venezuelan music of the plains. But I'll play it on the five-string banjo. So I'm pioneering techniques on my instrument to make it sound lit with that music. And then Larry, for example, when I'm like in the intro to this interview, you heard Roll in My Sweet Baby's Arms, which is a traditional bluegrass piece on which I was playing the banjo and singing, but Larry plays the maracas. And maracas never had a place in bluegrass until he wound up in North Carolina, but then it seems to fit pretty seamlessly. Mm. The banjo seems to fit very seamlessly in different genres of Afro-Caribbean music because it has a punch and an attack, much like instruments you'll find down there, like the tres or the cuatro or the bandola. Or there's so many different instruments that have a reminiscent attack. Anyway, so we just sort of explore each other's folk traditions, and then sometimes something completely new and beautifully strange will come out. Like songs that will have tons of metric modulations. Like it'll change and ebb and flow between time signatures, between like bluegrass and gaita, you know, like 6/8 and 3/4 time signatures for all you music people out there. A lot of Latin folk is in 3 and a lot of North American folk is in 4. But then you find some sort of ebb and flow between the two. That's kind of where we come in. We try to bring our musical know-how to the task and make it sort of fit together seamlessly. But because Larry and I are both so immersed in our own and each other's worlds, it kind of seems to happen organic.
Let me ask you this, Joe. Prior to our break, you were really getting into the weeds, getting to the meat and potatoes of, you know, on the threes and on the fours and how you combine your musical interests. So can you tell us the music making process, especially when combining these two unique sounds?
Sure. Well, the process is sort of it's much like the process has always been for both of us. It's just tune sharing. So, you know, even today, like Larry is working on this salsa piece called Catalina La O, and I'm going to be learning the tres/piano part on the banjo. So we have these like musical studies that sometimes go somewhere and sometimes don't. Like for every song that we end up playing on stage, there's 3 or 4 that didn't make the cut. But we are always exploring different, you know, hits from each other's respective genres. And then sometimes there's just this synergy. And it's like, well, we've obviously got to do that one. So the process is just constant musical exploration and seeing what's fly and what isn't so hip. And then, you know, when you find something magic, you build upon that and you incorporate more than the original. So we sort of faithfully start by picking apart traditional music in a very methodical way, like learning it. You know, learning the deciphering the code for why it sounds so good. And then we make it our own by, you know, maybe incorporating different arrangements. And so that's one part of what we do. And then as composers and singer-songwriters, we're bringing our own original material to the table and finding a way to make it breathe in the context of a duo. Because a lot of the stuff that we compose might be in our imaginations for like a 4 or 5 piece band. But as a duo, there's a lot of, you know, you've got like a third member of the team, which is silence and space. And that person's not physically there, but that person needs to work. So you need to make sure to give that imaginary third member enough of a job, which is don't put too much in it. Leave the space in there. And that'll make it even more hip. So it's kind of like we can create this dynamic of of a full band with a less is more approach. Anyway.
Joe, one thing that my grandmother would always tell me is to always be learning. Always be accepting new information, always be a sponge. And for you right here, it really seems like you take this kind of a student approach where you're learning from your bandmate as well as teaching, but it seems like you are learning a lot as well. Is that correct assume?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we both feel very blessed because Larry and I have led parallel lives. I spent, you know, my entire adolescence and all of my adult life trying to hone in my craft and learn how to do what I do technically, like learning from other, you know, I'm learning from my mentors and studying with people and acquiring this direct channel of knowledge. He's been doing the exact same thing, but in Venezuela. And then where we meet is at this interesting moment in our lives when we have somewhat absorbed, you know, lots of information that you can only absorb from being on the bandstand your whole life. You know, we've both been performing musicians since we were kids. And then when we come together, or when we came together, we realized, oh my God, this is great because we can work on this project and we can make a living. But at the same time, like on an off day like today, we can sit around and learn more. And it's endlessly intriguing. Unfortunately, you know, life gets lifey.
Yeah.
And then there's not enough time to study as much as you want because you've got to do more mundane, lifey things. So, but when we're out on the road and we have an off day, like the first thing we're going to do is wake up and start studying more music and plan the next album that we'll record a year or two down the line because we want to. We're both head over heels in love with music, and that's fortunate that we never knew if we would find someone as helter skelter as the other. We're very different people, but on a musical level, we both have this desire to play multiple instruments. You know, we're both multi-instrumentalists, and we're both composers and singer-songwriters. So we have a lot of parallels. And then when we get together, it feels like there's just not enough time to do all that we want to do. So we definitely are popping off right now. And yeah, it's like a lifelong student of music. It becomes a spiritual path. It's more than just, well, I'm learning this tune today. It's no, like, I'm learning this tune that Johnny Pacheco recorded in the Bronx in the late 70s. And it's, no one knows about it. And how could that be? And like, what can we do to make people know how hip that was and what was happening in the Bronx in the late 70s? You know, people don't even know that so much of the most listened to Latin American music was recorded in the United States.
Wow.
By Latinos who moved to New York or to Miami. Like there's so much to uncover and to share. So it's kind of like we get to experience it first and then we get to share it with our audience. It's really fun.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like work.
well, that's
the work is loading the van. And
well, that's what our elders tell us. They say that if you enjoy what you're doing at work, you never work. You never go to work. You never work a day in your life.
Yeah, totally.
You talked about popping off. So I want to talk about what is popping off this Friday. Can you let the folks at home know what they can expect and what's coming up on the 15th.
Well, this is a great pairing, and I know that that Terry Carranza is on to speak to what the Church World Services is doing. The perfect opportunity for us to share our art in conjunction with an organization that is helping people just like Larry that wind up in this whose lives somehow wound up in the mouth of a shark and they had to migrate somewhere. Not by choice. Almost no one would choose that. No one would ever go into this journey by choice and leave everything behind. So, but what we can do is what's popping off about us is where we can meet, where Larry and I always meet on stage is from this wellspring of joy. Like it's just so much fun to do what we do. And we hope that the music that we make can be like, you know, a mirror for other people. Just the cross-cultural joy and artistic expression are so hip and so wonderful. It's just nice to put that out into the world. And you know, our audiences have a lot of fun. I doubt they have as much fun as we do, though. So that's kind of what is going to be happening. You're just going to see two squirrely men in their 40s jumping around and switching instruments and sharing tunes and, you know, and sharing a piece of our souls and just having a bunch of fun. It'll also be a dance party for sure. So bring your dance shoes.
Oh.
We like to end every show with some Caribbean flair.
Ooh. Nice, nice. Yeah. Joe, I want to thank you for coming up on the Spark and giving us this information. March 15th, I know that the folks at home cannot wait. Just real quick, where can they get tickets?
You can get tickets on our website. It's larryandjoe.com. And I bet the Church World Services also has a link. I'm not sure. I'm sure that Carrie can speak to that in a moment. But, yeah, definitely you can find more ticket information on larryandjoe.com. Spelled just like that. Even though it's pronounced Larry, it's spelled like Larry.